Up next, Out Loud with John O'Caldwell, part of the Gingrich 360 Network.
Demetrius Griffin Jr. was just 15 years old when he was burned alive on the west side of Chicago. Placed in a garbage can and left to die in an alley, the teenager's death was ruled a homicide but remains unsolved. Today, I try to get to the bottom of what happened. This is Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell.
Welcome back to Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. I'm Gianno Caldwell, and on this week's show, I'm talking about violence in Chicago, which continues to devastate the city and so many families. In fact, over the long 4th of July weekend, at least 108 people were shot in Chicago, including two police officers and several children. Two of those children were girls age 5 and 6 years old. At least 17 were killed in the shootings, and another person was murdered in a stabbing. And just 2 weeks earlier, over Father's Day weekend last month, 110 people were shot in Chicago. 14 of them, including 5 children, were killed. That was in less than 3 days. I want to tackle this tragic situation in Chicago by going back to one especially horrific case. In 2016, 15-year-old Demetrius Griffin Jr. was found dead in a garbage can, burned beyond recognition in an alley on the west side of Chicago. The Cook County Medical Examiner's Office said he was burned alive following an autopsy. Law enforcement ruled Demetrius' death a homicide, but his case remains unsolved. His family is unsatisfied, demanding justice for a boy who was described as gentle, respectful, and someone who loved dogs. They have offered rewards for information on the killer or killers. To learn more, my guest on this week's show is Demetrius' aunt, Rochelle Sykes, who has continued fighting for her nephew and seeking answers. Rochelle is also a woman of faith who works at the New Mount Pilgrim Church in Chicago. With that, I want to welcome Rochelle Sykes to Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Now, you know, I've met you before. I actually interviewed you for Fox News Channel. And then I pushed the Laura Ingraham show to do the town hall on Chicago violence, and you joined us then, and then you joined us for a second town hall the following year. So much has happened in the city of Chicago. If you look at the numbers, some have estimated the 4th of July weekend, there was over 110 people shot. So many fatally, I believe about 18 to 20 fatally, including two police officers. What the heck is going on in Chicago?
I have no clue. I see right now, if you know that your child or your significant other, your loved one, your grandchildren, your children are doing things that are not of legal standards. We need to come together and turn these people in. We know that every child is not perfect. Every child is not perfect. But when you harbor a person that may have killed or hurt someone, or you know that they have thousands and thousands of guns or just a house full of gun and ammunition and hanging with the wrong people, I'd rather you turn that child in than you stand at the grave site and watch him lower down.
And I 100% agree with you as someone who's from the city and whose family has also been impacted by the violence in Chicago. I would rather, much rather, even a family member go to jail than to see them out committing more crimes and endangering the lives of others. So I really appreciate you saying that. And I wanna get into what happened with your nephew, such a young life, 15 years old when this happened. Can you take us back to that tragic day in 2016? When did you know something was wrong, and how did you find out Demetrius was no longer with us?
Well, it goes back to that Saturday morning. My mom's birthday was on the 19th. We go back to that Saturday morning. We were picking her up. Me and a couple other church members were picking her up to take her out for breakfast to celebrate her birthday, because the church's pastor's anniversary was that weekend as well. And so when I pulled up to pick her up, my sister and my niece was coming out, and I'm like, okay, where is she going this early in the morning? Because my sister's not a morning person. She said, well, Demetrius didn't come home last night. And I was like, okay, what do you mean he didn't come home last night? Because that made no sense, because he's never missed a curfew. And she said, well, he didn't come home last night. And for some odd reason, right away to my mind came what I saw on the news, is that they found the body a block and a half away in a garbage can burnt beyond recognition. They had said it was a small frame man. They said it was a man at first. So we went on to breakfast and we sat and ate, and but we was uneasy. Everybody at the table was uneasy. So we came back, we came to the church, we did what we needed to do at the church, and praying that by the time we got back to the house, he would have showed up, or we would know his whereabouts. And when we came back to the house, she said she hadn't seen him. No one had seen him. And so I said, well, you know, it's time that we contact the police, because this is not of his nature. And I did speak to someone at the police station, and they asked me some questions about, you know, how tall was he, how big was he, and things of that nature. And then the person I had spoken with told me, well, I think you would need to get some dental records. Amber Alert did go up. I did authorize for them to pick up his dental records. And at that point, it was a waiting game. We waited. That was Saturday. We waited Sunday. We attended church. We helped our pastor celebrate his anniversary, because that's what we would have done naturally. And we just prayed that the outcome wasn't the outcome that we were feeling it was. We did not tell pastor. We did tell one of the associate ministers, so that someone at the church would know what was going on, because Demetrius was also a member of the church. He was baptized and Christian at New Mount Pilgrim. So we didn't tell pastor. Monday came around. I did let him know that Monday. And he was a little bit distraught about it. About 3-something, I got a call to come, that the police was there. And by the time I got there, they were leaving. And they had identified him by his dental records, that was him. I mean, if the house was full of people and folks were screaming. When I walked up, folks were screaming. You can just hear people screaming from outside. And to say that, when I say that, I pulled up in a car to a house where the door was closed, and I can hear screaming. You mean to tell me no one heard him scream in that alley? He was burnt alive. No one heard him scream in that alley. Are we going about our business so much that we don't recognize when there's something wrong and to report it? Are we that afraid that we cannot report when a crime is going on? When you see something out there, you don't say anything. When you see something wrong, if you saw a young person walking down the street with a handgun in their hand, you wouldn't call the police? That's the part that's disturbing to me, is that we are allowing them to take over. And then they are getting younger and younger people to do these crimes because they're getting the slap on the wrist. At some point, we have to stand up and say, enough is enough. And it starts in community.
You're absolutely correct. And every time I hear this story, it really brings tears to the eyes of so many. Lori Ingram heard the story and she began crying on air. I think that is just deplorable what has happened to your nephew and what has happened in the city of Chicago. And it seems to be no answers to what's going on. In fact, things have gotten worse, not better. They've gotten worse. And you wonder, and you mentioned, you said, you know, they get a slap on the wrist, and that goes back to the Cook County Prosecutor's Office, who's allowed over 25,000 people off without charging them. And these were felony cases. Some of them include murder. Knowing what happened to your nephew, how does that make you feel?
It makes me sick to my stomach, because one of those people could have been the person that murdered my nephew. I have no answers. I have no closure. I've had no sleep. I mean, I have nothing, nothing. We didn't even have a funeral. There was nothing to say goodbye to. They met us at the cemetery with the casket. That's how we said goodbye. We had a memorial service, and it was over 700 people here. But it's not the same. That's not the same. It's different when there's someone that passes elder age and someone that passes that has been sick, because then you get to sit with that person, and you get to talk with that person, and get to, you know, let them know that it's okay. But when someone is snatched from you with no means of an explanation of all, it's a hard thing to deal with. My family is torn apart, and I'm for sure there's other families like mine with no resolution, no answer, and wondering why this is continually to happen. And then some people don't say anything or do anything until it hits your front door. You need to start saying something now. You need to start doing something now. Anybody in my family knows that I will turn them in without a doubt. I will have them locked up without a doubt. I'd rather you be alive and locked up, and then my whole family going through the misery of having to put you in the ground, not knowing what happened to you, and wishing we could have done something more.
And with that being the case, as you just said, you would rather someone go to jail than throw their lives away by shooting someone else and then possibly ending up dead themselves. You would rather them go to jail. And I understand that. And let me ask you this question. And I know that your nephew, you were responsible for him. Was his mom not around? Was his dad not around? What was the situation there?
No, his dad was around. His dad recently died of an illness. Yeah, I think it was from a broken heart, but they were around, but he was my only nephew. So he's a two-teeth baby. When Demetrius was born, he was preemie. I think he weighed a little bit less than 3 pounds, and he had these beautiful bluish-gray eyes. So he became everyone's baby, because he was the baby of the family for a long time, and then he was so little for his age. So he was everybody's baby. So even though I did a lot of things for him, everybody actually did a lot of things for him. They just took him under his wing because he was a lovable kid. He had an old soul. He loved animals. He did things for the native. He saw someone carrying bags, he would run and help them take their things in the house. That's the type of kid he was.
So he was a good kid, not involved in any of the gangs or any of the trouble in Chicago, which typically when I was growing up, the way people were shot, or the reason why, is because they were involved in gangs. They hung out with the wrong people. And certainly these days that doesn't matter anymore. It's not the same thing. It's not an affiliation thing. A kid was 20. Well, a young man, 20 years old, on the L just the other day, was a student of the University of Chicago. A bullet shot through the train station window and paralyzed him, and his parents just recently had to make the tough choice of taking him off of a ventilator. It's happening to a lot of people in the city of Chicago all over, and it's not just frustrating, it's become a war zone. You don't know if you're gonna, you enter, you may not survive and leave. It's horrendous.
Where are they getting these guns? Younger and younger are carrying guns. Why?
Absolutely. And you're correct to ask that question. And more importantly, why is the Cook County Prosecutor's Office letting people off the hook with a slap on the wrist for doing serious crimes, creating more, wreaking more havoc in the communities? Now, I want to ask you, I read that your nephew, Demetrius, he was murdered by other black kids because he refused to join a gang. But some have said in the media that they don't really know and the case just remains unsolved. Do you have any information as to the motive of why this would happen to your nephew?
No, I do not. It made no sense because Demetrius, he was 15, but he looked to be 9. He was only 97 pounds. He was only 4'9 in height, so he was little for his age. He had a major problem with fitting in with his age group. So because he didn't really fit with them, he played with kids that were younger than he was, because he was more of their size when he was growing up. There's nothing that you could not knock on my mother's door and say, well, Demetrius did this or Demetrius did that. There was nothing that you could knock on her door to tell her. Never had any problems with Demetrius in school. Never had to go up there for him. I never had to go up there for him. When he got in high school, I'm the one that had him enrolled. He was only there 2 weeks. I've never got a call about that, because TT did not play that. My thing is, Demetrius was a little bit scary because he was smaller. And like I said, he played with smaller kids because of his weight and height. So when they say that they wanted him in a gang, and my only thing that comes to my mind is, for what? He can't do anything. He's too scary. And he know his TTA is not going to play that. He never drank, and he never smoked any marijuana or did any drugs. So if they were trying to recruit him, what would be the purpose of recruiting him and why? What would be that purpose and why? So that because he's littler, you think he would get off? But see, he wouldn't join the game because he know that's not what we instilled into him.
We need to pause here for a break, but we'll be back.
You know, it's one thing to kill someone, but this was done in such a gruesome way. Burning Demetrius alive, leaving him to die in a garbage can in an alley. I mean, this is just next level torturous. There was no one in his family that was involved in anything that they were trying to respond to and trying to get somebody that was beloved in your family. There was nothing like that or anything that you can think of that possibly could have occurred.
In my immediate family, and as far as I know, we have no gang members. And if it is, it's something that I don't know of. I don't have any brothers, so it's just me and my sister. And I have a stepsister. And my sons are not gang related. My sons don't even hang on a corner because they know that I don't allow that. I cannot imagine what it could have been. I've heard a bunch of things. I've heard it was gang, you know, they wanted him to join a gang. Then I heard it was some skinheads. I heard something about that. And then somebody said he might have saw something. None of it makes sense. Nothing that you can say would make sense to take someone's life by burning them alive. Nothing you could say would make sense of me hearing this kid yelling for help and me not doing anything. None of that makes sense. Nowhere around does that make sense. And that's why on the corner of Cortez and Central, there's a bench. There's a big red cross. There's a book box for books for children. We keep that corner clean because you're going to remember that this kid was over here and you said nothing. We make it clean. I keep it clean. I pull weeds. I keep that spot clean. so children can go and sit on that bench. They can get in a book out that book box. They can feel comfortable sitting right there on that corner. Nothing makes sense. All is killing. All is shooting. Shooting up in the air. What would be the purpose of that? Get a job. My grandmother was rolling over in her grave now because she lived on a plantation and what we had to go through to be where we are now. And then you're pulling on that grandma.
Yes, and I absolutely agree with what you're saying. Do you feel any level of frustration with the law enforcement or the politicians that were around during this time? I think Rahm Emanuel was in office during this era.
Yes, I do. The superintendent at that time and the mayor at that time, we contact them 30 days. I had 30 days of confirmation numbers where I had called 311. We have yet to hear from either one of them.
Are you serious?
I kid you not. Let me tell you about our former president.
I just want to make sure that I'm hearing you right. You're saying Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the superintendent of police at that time, neither one of them followed up with you? Their offices, no one touched base?
No, we've never heard from them. And at that time, I did contact Kim Fox's office because I just needed some help or where to go.
The Cook County prosecutor, Kim Fox, is who you're referring to.
Yes. And I was told that they couldn't do anything until there's an arrest. They couldn't help me until there was an arrest. That's what I was told by them. I sent a letter to the White House, to our former president. I got a letter back. I didn't send a letter requesting any money from him. I needed some help. I needed help. I don't know what to do. This is the first tragedy in our family. I don't know what to do. I need help. I got a letter back from the White House that they don't do donations. That's not what I asked you for. I asked you for help because at that point, we didn't know if there was a serial killer out here. Because who does that to a young person? A child. So we didn't know if it was a serial killer out here. We've had a GoFundMe page. We've had that open to, I did get a foundation set up for him to help with maybe getting detectives, just to help with the justice for this. And then to try to help other young people. Barely $10,000. And $5,000 of that came from Laura.
Laura Ingram donated to the foundation.
Yeah, she did. She donated $5,000. But my mom always say you have, and I'm not a racist person or anything like that. And I know people donate to things that they want to donate to, and my mom was very upset because the two little girls that came up missing in Indiana. And my heart went out to their family because I know how they felt. I know how the family felt because, you know, we've lost our loved one too. But her thing was is that they had got the FBI and then they had got all of this money from, the state. And here you is, we're out here. We're passing out flyers. We're having fundraisers. On Mother's Day, we stand out there on the corner. We give out Mother's Day gifts. We give out Father's Day gifts. We have a community block club every year for the kids. We give out book bags and clothes and purses and things of that nature. They have a college thing at New Mount Pilgrim where Demetrius was a member. We give out stuff for the kids that are going away to college. We do all of that, and it seems as though that because of the color of his skin, this is her feeling. And I understand. She seemed like it's being fresh, brushed up under the rug because it doesn't get that same priority.
And part of the reason for that, and this was a very gruesome event, obviously, the murder of your nephew. Chicago, the politicians there, and I'm sure you would agree, have completely failed its citizens, and it's become a weekly or daily occurrence of bullets piercing through skin And that's all it is to them, it seems to be. So why is it that people continue to support the same, the Kim Fox, the Lori Lightfoots of the world, the ones who aren't making a difference, is these politicians? Why do people continue to support them in the city of Chicago, knowing that they've not gotten any results?
Could it possibly be, not necessarily, that they're getting so much support, is that so many people are desensitized and they don't support at all? So that makes the small amount that do support seems so large, because there are so many people that do not vote. There are so many people that do not vote, because I've talked to people that have not voted. My vote don't make no difference. But how you know your vote don't make no difference? Your one vote could be the vote that made the difference. They feel that there is no change. They feel that things are still going to be the same. It's going to be the same thing. There's going to be people making decisions for low-income people that are not low-income. There's people making decisions for people that have five and six people living in their household, and they're living in a mansion. They want people to make decisions that live the life that they live. You go on the west side of Chicago, you can ride down Madison Street. Tell me how many grocery stores or fruit markets you see in the black neighborhoods.
Yeah, they're food deserts.
You got corner stores and Italian beef. I mean, what restaurant do you have? I mean, they feel that you're taking away everything from them. So why should they vote? It won't make a difference.
We're talking to Rochelle Sykes, whose 15-year-old nephew was tragically murdered in Chicago. We've got much more with her on the unsolved case and the violence in Chicago more broadly right after a quick break.
It's not making sense at all. The policy decisions that are being made is not making sense, and is actually making so many other people in the community less safe in the city of Chicago. It's beyond troubling. It's disgusting. And I wish things could change, but it doesn't seem as though there's been as much value on the black lives that matter. And the folks who, and just like you mentioned, you said, hey, these people, if you're walking down the street with a gun, then someone needs to call the police. If you know who the shooter is, they need to be turned in. Those black lives matter. And if you don't, then you're obviously saying the antithesis of it, that they don't matter in that case. So it really needs to be outrage full scale, not just with people like you, who you had this beloved nephew who died in a very gruesome way, who was murdered in a gruesome way. But everyone needs to lift their voice up. It needs to be a complete community that refuse to capitulate to the gang members who want to take over their neighborhoods. Absolutely. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. And then they shouldn't have to live in their house and be afraid that if I turn you in, they gonna tell you I turned you in, and then they coming after me. Or I turn you in and you get to court, and because the system is overcrowded, they let you go.
Which has happened a number of times in Cook County, especially in the Cook County jail during the COVID era. A lot of folks were let out who went on to commit crimes, and that's not just in Cook County, but that's across the country. People were let out and they went on to commit other crimes, including killing people. You know, I want to ask you, because I know you're a woman of faith and you work for the New Mount Pilgrim Church in Chicago. How has your faith factored into how you've dealt with Demetrius' death?
That's the only thing that has kept me. I was once asked, and I had to look at myself, and I did, what did I forgive the person that killed Demetrius? And I have to be honest, even though I believe in God and I know God is the head of my life, I don't forgive them. I feel sorry for them, because there has to be something seriously wrong with you to do what you did and be able to sleep at night. Because like I said, I haven't slept in 5 years. I slept straight through a night in 5 years. I can hear that little boy calling my name. I can hear him calling. So I feel sorry for you, because there's no way you can be resting. And for everybody that heard him and didn't say nothing, there's no way you could be resting. I wasn't there and I ain't resting. But if it wasn't for God, I don't think I would have made it through this far. I don't think I would sit on that corner and pull weeds. I don't think I could put the events together. That's God in me. And I know that this outcome has something bigger. I don't know what it is, but I know it does.
Now, what would you tell Demetrius if you can speak to him today in this moment?
I'm sorry. TT let you down. I am so sorry. Because I always told him I would take care of him. I've always told him TT will always be here for you. And I feel like I have failed him. And I would say I am so sorry. Because you had to go through some tremendous pain for that to happen to you. And I am sorry. And if I could trade places with him, I would trade places with him right now. Because I don't know what he had was capable of. That could have been the next president. I am sorry. I am so sorry. And if I could trade places, I would trade places with him. I would beg whoever it was to just take me and let him go.
That is very tough to hear. But I can tell you right now, you did not fail your nephew. Not one bit. And I'm sure if he was here, he would thank you for continuing to fight on in his name. Like, there's so many other young people in Chicago who lost their lives and they didn't have Rochelle Sykes to chase down the police, if you will, and try to get answers and work with politicians to try to get something done, solve this heinous, heinous crime. So I'm sure he would be thankful for you being there for him and the family as you have been.
Thank you. Yeah, but it hurts so bad. I mean, especially, I don't know if it's the not knowing or do I really want to know? And my heart hurts to see all these young babies, you know, they don't know one day from another riding in the back of a car. And the next thing you know, they're dead. I mean, you got all these young mothers and fathers and don't know where to turn because, you know, you took in my breath away. You took in my breath away. I mean, to give birth to a child is not an easy thing. And definitely raising one is even harder. And then someone else that has no care about life just can walk past and take all of that away from a person. When they kill, do they know how permanent that is? You're not hurting the person you killed. You're hurting all the other people left behind, even your own family. Because when they catch you, you got mama at the courthouse crying, grandma at the courthouse crying. You got cousins and stuff got to send you money, put money on your books. You got the person that was murdered family, don't know how to put stuff together, don't know how to get it together. Don't know how to make decisions from that moment forward because all they knew was their child, their grandchild, their cousin, their nephew. They need to know the extent of that one decision that they made. It's not hurting that person you killed. It's hurting everybody else. Because now this community is tore up. Now this lady scared to go to the grocery store to get her groceries because somebody killed somebody on the corner. Now you got a whole lady that can't get food in her own home. Scared to go sit on her porch. Kids can't play out in the street. Something's got to give. We got to stand up for something because we're falling down for everything.
Yes, ma'am. Do you think you ever run for public office?
No. I'm honest. I'm honest, and unfortunately, I might not have a good filter on my mouth, but I'm honest. I'm going to tell it like it is. If it ain't right, it ain't right.
Yes, ma'am. And I'm 100% with you, and I want to thank you for sharing Demetrius' story. And as you fight on, I definitely want my listeners to be involved in a fight with you. So if you will let us know, where can people donate or help in other ways to find justice for Demetrius?
Well, they can go into any U.S. bank and give them justice for Demetrius Griffin Jr. He has an account set up there. There's also a GoFundMe page. We would love to have a community youth center where we teach life skills to ages 5 to 18, help them apply for college, make sure they get in school, make sure they get a GED, if they need tutoring, if they need counseling, to help provide all of that for them. They can do that. Or they can just, if they want to just send a check, they can always send one to New Mount Pilgrim Missionary Baptist Church, but make it out to Justice for Demetrius. And the address is 4301 West Washington Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60624. They can do either one of those, and anything will help.
And is Demetrius, and you want to spell it for folks, how it's spelled out?
D-E-M-E-T-R-I-U-S. And Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N, Jr.
Okay, well, we're going to be praying for you, certainly, and hope people donate to the cause, especially. But we really appreciate your strength. I'm certain that your nephew is really, really thankful for what you've been able to do in keeping the family together and keeping his memory well and alive. Thank you so much for joining me on Out Loud with Gianna Caldwell.
Okay, thank you so much.
I want to thank Rochelle Sykes again for a powerful interview. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review and rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions for me, please email me at outloud@gingrich360.com and I'll try to answer them in our future episodes. And please sign up for my monthly newsletter at gingrich360.com/outloud. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Parler at Gianna Caldwell. And if you're interested in learning more about my story, please pick up a copy of my best-selling book titled Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. Special thanks to our producer, John Cascio, researcher, Aaron Klingman, and executive producers, Debbie Myers and Speaker Newt Gingrich, part of the Gingrich 360 Network.